Welcome to the SEI's podcast series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute. The SEI is a federally funded research and development center at Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. A transcript of today's podcast is posted on the SEI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Shane McGraw, and today I am pleased to introduce you to Bill Nichols, a senior researcher in the SEI's Team Software Process Program. Bill's work at the SEI focuses on software development, process, and process management using the Team Software Process, or TSP. Today, Bill and I will be discussing how disciplined process enables and enhances agility. Welcome, Bill.
Oh, thank you.
And first question, what does it mean to be agile?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Agile is really sort of a catch-all. It's applied to a number of different methods, but they share certain common beliefs and values. Typically, people who believe themselves to be agile think that you'll get the best results if you focus on things like empowered teams, collaboration with your stakeholders, not doing unnecessary work, and getting frequent feedback. Now, agilists hate the term process because they use the word somewhat differently than we do. But if you think about process, it's doing something repeatedly with some discipline, and it's doing something to achieve an end. And that's typically what the agilists are trying to do. They're focusing on how you do the work, but they're focused on a principles level rather than a strict rules level. Now, I've made that list pretty short by being very general, and that gets us kind of removed from being directly actionable. So let's try to be more specific. What do the agilists really do? In a recent Association for Computing Machines Communications, Laurie Williams published a couple of surveys she did. Now, the most common response on what are agile principles, are they valuable, which ones are the most valuable, were because agile teams choose among software development practices to be agile, they should choose practices that are in line with agile principles. Sort of sounds like it's begging the question. So we understand from that that the teams are choosing their own methods, that the teams have to be involved. Okay, that's important. That they don't have a specific set of practices. That comes out from that survey too. So what really are the principles? And Laurie followed that up with some lists of principles and had them rate them. Turns out there wasn't a lot of separation between a lot of the different statements, but the ones that stood out were highest priority is to satisfy the customer with early and continuous delivery of valuable software. So they're very focused on getting product out. Working software is the primary measure of progress. So that's their primary feedback. Deliver software frequently. They're really talking a lot about deliver. Build products around motivated individuals. So now we're starting to get into the importance of individual and team motivations. Give them the environment and support they need. Then at regular intervals, reflect. So you have some beginnings here of process improvement. What is the reflection for? It's how to become more effective. Tune and adjust your behavior. So an assumption that maybe doesn't come out of that top five list, at least clearly, is the importance of the feedback for replanning. That is continuously adjusting your plan. Now, it's a practical response. Where you have imperfect information, imperfect requirements, conditions are changing, you have maybe process variation. You have to make an initial plan, but you have to collect data, use that data to feedback, and change your plan accordingly, you know, adjust to reality. Now, there are a couple of themes that come out of this too. I already talked about the focus on delivery of software. That's their objective, deliver software, deliver it continuously. There's a lot of focus on people. How do you motivate people? How do you get people engaged in the work? And third, improve the process. That's what reflection is for. So those are their principles. What do they actually do? Well, the most commonly used practices were short iterations, you know, typically 30 days or less. Continuous integration, defining done. What does done look like? What are the criteria for done? Automated tests, typically automated integration tests, and automated unit tests. So at a practices level, you see a lot of focus on process and specific techniques. Now, there are a lot of different techniques you can choose from, but these are the ones that get the most attention. Some of the lower rated practices were things like co-located teams, coding standards, planning poker, stabilization, iterations, code inspections, burn down charts. So lots and lots of individual practices. Some get used more than others. The key to people considering themselves agile is, are they choosing practices that support their principles rather than the specific practices they're actually using? Okay.
And what are some of the agile methods? You hear different terms. What are the more popular ones or the ones you most typically work with?
Well, the ones that I see most often are typically Scrum, and that's an overall process framework that has a planning phase, short iterations, a reflection. Scrum doesn't focus as much on the specific practices, so that's an exercise to the reader.
Okay, so you've explained what Agile is and what it means to be Agile. Mm-hmm. What are some of the problems in Agile development that organizations face?
Well, the biggest problem today is software is getting bigger and bigger. And the big question in Agile is, how do you scale? How do you make this work for larger organizations, for larger project sizes? You know, things that work within a small team with people who can talk face-to-face don't necessarily scale when you go to bigger projects. And the ways we run small companies are very different than the ways we run big companies. The way we manage a small community, a homeowners association, is different than the way we manage a city or a state. I think part of the problem that Agile has with the large scale projects is that there's still a lot of variability, and that comes back to the discipline. When you have a lot of variability in the individual parts of the project, the big project can suffer from that weakest link, as in the weakest link of the chain. A large project can be taken off the rails if just one or two parts of it aren't functioning well. So I think that's certainly part of the challenge in Agile, getting more consistent behavior out of all of the individual teams.
So you have to reward the team, not necessarily the individual.
That's a big part of Agile. Agile focuses very much on the team rather than the individual. And part of our critique from the TSP perspective is you really have to start focusing more on the individuals, because the individuals are the people who make up the teams. Individuals can, just as teams can affect an overall project and program, individuals really can affect the teams. And we'll have some things to say about that. Now, going back to the theme of the discipline, Jeff Sutherland, who was one of the co-inventors of Scrum, he had a 10-year retrospective. What are the challenges that face Agile? And a lot of them are very familiar to they're very familiar to us doing TSP. Things like lack of ready-to-develop backlog. The backlog are your sets of requirements, like what you need. Is this really ready? In a sense, that is a done criteria. Are these requirements really ready to begin development? Let's see. Lack of done at end of a sprint. You get to the end of a sprint, and you might not have done your testing. You might not have really done your continuous integration. Have you done code reviews? Maybe not. Is that really done? So you can have too much emphasis on meeting that milestone, that end of sprint deadline, and forget about some of those important things in your process. What about the daily impediments? Fred Brooks said, how does a project end up 2 years behind schedule? One day at a time. Even on a 30-day schedule, if you aren't managing your work day to day, you can find yourself behind. The daily scrum is supposed to avoid that, but they don't always work. What are the problems there? Tolerating defects. Well, that's one of the if you get a bug list at the end of your sprint, if you take the time to fix them, you might miss your date. It can be very tempting to do the easy thing, and that is just tolerate the defects and call it done and ship the code. At the bigger level, you have lack of organizational change agents. Most of the Agile methods, being very team-focused, haven't yet evolved to organizational change or training the people in Scrum to be leaders of organizational change. And then that has the fall through that you lack the agility in the overall organization. Now, you see some technical issues here, but from our perspective, a lot of this comes back to the lack of discipline. We have these sets of things that we know we should be doing. we understand we should be doing, we know how to do them, yet we still don't always do them. We might do it most of the time, but sometimes we don't. And when we don't, there often can be consequences that might not show up till later.
So how do you motivate them to do these processes or stay disciplined? You know, do you have some benefits or some suggestions?
Well, the typical Agile approach is to use peer pressure. TSP has some additional mechanisms, and that is we're very focused in TSP on measurement and on process and on holding each other accountable for following the process. So one of the things that sets TSP apart is the concept of the role manager. The role managers are members of the team who each take responsibility for some aspect of the team management. If the team is going to be self-managed, the team has to manage itself. So different individuals will take responsibility for being the conscience of the team with regard to different aspects. You might be the conscience of the team to make sure, are all of these things going through tests? Have you really done these inspections? Have you checked the results of the inspection? Were they done effectively? So we have another level at the where the individuals will be the conscience of the team and working with each other to help assure the process is really used.
Okay, the next question, you kind of touched on it there, but what other ways does TSP work with Agile?
Well, there are several things we can say about that. I think there are some points of real commonality in some areas where we depart, but I think that those departures really reinforce the commonality. We tend to be driven in TSP very much by defining the process and measuring. There are some reasons for this. We think that precise definitions, precise measures, are the most effective and most meaningful form of feedback. And for those to be meaningful, you have to have a context in which those measures have some real meaning, which means you have to be doing something reasonably repeatedly. That means following your process. With that in mind, let's go back to some of the compatibilities. Typical Agile value is to value people over processes and tools. TSP focuses on the people for the simple reason that it's the people who implement the process, it's the people who use the tools, the people who implement the technology. Plenty of research over the years has shown that you have to focus on technology and tools and how they enable people to do their jobs. You can't just replace them in technology, it's creative work. So you have to provide the environment and the tools to help the people be creative. So TSP is necessarily focused on how to work with people. Now, along with that, we create this data-rich environment that provides many sources of feedback. It could be the rate at which work is being done. It could be the effectiveness of inspections, how much time you're spending in different types of activities. So we try to measure and provide meaningful feedback at different points in the process. So we're not just getting infrequent feedback. And when we do these reflections at the end of a development cycle, it's based on data. It's based on data and real analysis. So if we have an opinion, we always ask, well, what does the data show? Do the data support that opinion?
And does this help technical debt then? Or does this help them decide what's getting put off until another date?
Well, you make intelligent decisions based on what the data say, what does history say, what are going to be the consequences? If we don't do these tests right now, if we don't fix these bugs right now, what are the consequences? I have seen organizations that quite literally have not produced any new code in a year or more because they are now fixing all the defects from the field. That's a terrible place to be. But if you manage the work you should be doing ongoing and do it in the right way, that is the fastest way to get your job done.
Okay, last question. You know, we've touched on this a little bit with the previous response, but many would say that process and discipline inhibit creativity. How would you respond to that?
Quite the reverse. In almost any domain, in any creative field, be it art, literature, or software, the most productive and the most creative people are almost invariably the most disciplined. Now, it doesn't mean you rigidly follow a set of rules. But you know what the principles are, you know what things that you can't get away with skipping, and you do the right things and you follow that discipline. Let me talk a bit about the discipline of a process. And I'll take an entirely different domain just to drive home this point. In music composition, composers have known for years that it's easier if you do melody first, melody before lyrics. You hear that all the time. How do you know this is true? Everyone has kids who make up lyrics to the birthday song. It's easy. You have this structure that's defined, a rhythm, a meter, a form of where the emphasis should go, and they can make up the lyrics. That structure that they've been provided, the hard part is making the melody. They can now unlock the creativity, and you end up being more creative and more productive by following a simple process. Guess what? It's the same thing in software. If you do good requirements and good design, you can now unlock the kind of creativity you need, or you can now bring when you do the development. Do things in a certain order makes you more productive and more creative. That's just so there are a number of things where the discipline in TSP apply directly to software engineering. Time management. People can't be creative when they're under time pressure. We don't do our best creative work. You have to manage your time. The greatest artists, from Michelangelo to Picasso, they were very diligent in managing their creative time. They set aside time to be creative. How do you do that? Well, one of the things is you have to set aside the time to prepare to be creative. Whether it's choosing the right block of marble, it's preparing the canvases. You have to set aside time for that. If you don't plan for it, it doesn't happen, and it'll take away from your creative time. We use the disciplined work habits to separate that creative from the routine. You know, being creative is demanding. It's tiring. It's a lot of work. In software, the design activities where we really express most of our creativity. If you try to spend too much time designing, you'll stop being creative. Yet we see a lot of developers who try to do their designing while they're doing the coding. And you end up with a less overall productive approach. If you do your design and use real design notations, which are richer expressions of creativity than your programming languages, you can create an excellent framework. So now the coding is less demanding and you can actually do more total work and you can be more creative. You have to have standards. An artist, for example, would want to know, is this block of marble going to be adequate for my purposes? Are there flaws that make it unusable? Well, that's the problem we face with requirements. Are these requirements ready? What does a usable requirement look like? You need a standard. Similarly, if you're doing a code inspection, you have to know, is this thing really ready to be gone into code inspection? Are these modules, based on the data we see, based on the inspections and the tests, are these really ready to integrate? If you don't have those standards in place, then you are going to be spending a lot of your time doing rework. So the technical excellence has to be defined with a set of standards. What does excellence really look like? What is good enough? And that really gets us to the last part. Now, I touched on it earlier. Most software projects spend about half their time in test. I don't mean just the unit test or the test-driven development. I mean final test with integration, system test, acceptance test.
Systems ready to go.
Yes. This is to make a final shippable product. They spend about half their total time in testing. That's typical. I mean, there are plenty that do less, but the typical is 40 to 50% just in that phase. And typical products spend about half their total cost and effort in maintenance. Maintenance means minor enhancements typically and bug fixes. Well, testing is not a very creative process. It's engaging, you have to solve problems, but you aren't being creative, you're just fixing the product. So you've got half the total product life cycle in maintenance. Of what's left, you've got half of that in testing. What's left to be creative? If you want to be creative, break out of this trap, build it right the first time, and give yourself more time to do the creative work that we really want to do. And our benchmarks tell us that if you follow a disciplined process, a quality process, you can get that testing time, that late testing time, somewhere between 10-20% of your total project. That's a lot of found time.
Excellent answer. Bill, thank you very much for joining us today. Can you give the listeners a list of publications where they can go for a deeper dive into your research?
Well, I won't try to list all of the publications. What I would recommend is go to the TSP website on the SEI, www.sei.cmu.edu/TSP. There you'll find a link to the SEI library and the TSP Symposium. The TSP Symposium has a number of articles and some papers going back several years. Some of them have been written by us, many of them by our user community. And they'll tell you what their experiences have been.
Excellent. This podcast and the SEI podcast series is also available on CMU's iTunes U website. As always, if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to email us at info@sei.cmu.edu. Thank you for joining us today.